This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
There's so many great scenes in it as well. I think that there's so many, you know, you can do this movie, a time loop movie, but to be funny as well is quite a challenge.
But also it gets very, very dark.
It does get dark. As I say, the original concept was much darker, but the darkness is still in there. He throws a toaster in the bath to try and kill himself.
Jumps off the bridge.
Yeah. Kidnapped the groundhog. But it's got some great lines in there as well. I will always love the line, a classic line, one of the greats, which is where he says, "Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?" And she says, "I don't know, but I can check with the kitchen."
Hello, film fans. Joining FlixWatcher in the studio today, we have Scott.
Hello.
Amon.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hey.
And we're here to review Groundhog Day. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Today in the studio we have Scott and Amon. If you would like to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about the things you do, please.
I'm Scott Davis. I am found mainly on red carpets these days and doing junkets for a website called Hey You Guys, which the lovely gentleman to my left, Amon, used to work for. When did you used to work for them? Is it 2015? 16?
Around then, yeah. Let's go with that.
Let's go around that. Which is almost a dream job. Just missing the millions of pounds, obviously, you know. But hey, it's a fantastically run little website. I think it's the UK's biggest independent film website.
So it's just focuses on film, does it?
We do TV and stuff as well, yeah. But we're very focused on the films. You know, doing these red carpets, I always get asked to, you know, like, oh, no Harvey Weinstein questions. Or the other day it was...
You're kind of coached as to what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say.
Don't ask Rosamund Pike about the coronavirus. It's like, why would anyone want to ask Rosamund Pike about the coronavirus?
Because some publications are just stupid.
Yeah, so we're not very gossipy in that sense. Yeah. We are very much about the films, and because it's run by a group of film fanatics
really resonate with the actors and the people you're interviewing, because they do get all the kind of Daily Mail celebrity people in it. They've got access because they've got such a big readership, but also they ask the least interesting questions. So when it's someone who actually enjoys the films and enjoys what they're about to see, or wants to know a bit more past the surface, then they must get so few of those questions that actually
we try very hard to keep it film. Myself and my colleague Stefan, who is pretty much us two that does it more often than not, we very much pride ourselves in doing that. And surprisingly, there's a lot of people in the film community, actors and directors, who know who we are. And we have like a little scissor. Have you seen the scissor reel before? You've seen Tom Hiddleston going, "Hey, you guys," and all of that kind of stuff. So we've got a list of quite a lot of big name people that know who we are, or really like have told us straight on, "I love reading Hey You Guys" and stuff like that. So that's very fulfilling. But you know, it's no empire, is it, sadly, one? But you never know.
Is that where you're from?
We can dream.
Yeah. My name is Amon Warman. I'm a freelance film, or I say freelance. On my Twitter bio, it says pay me Lance, which I think more people should change it from free to pay me, because I think there's certain outlets where you mistake the free for free. And yeah, it's irritating. So let's try this again. My name is Amon Warman. Pay me Lance. Film and TV critic for Empire Magazine. I do weekly film reviews for TalkSport Radio, and I'm also a video editor. I'm working on my annual edit, the Summer Blockbuster Montage, which is coming out.
Are you going to have any films to put in your podcast? Given they all might be moved back, so they might be like a full.
Oh gosh! I'm praying that everyone who's got big films coming out this summer will hold their nerve. Otherwise, it will be a very short summer blockbuster montage. But yeah, no, I really enjoy doing those. I enjoy flexing that muscle. It's become kind of a yearly, annual, institution thing. Over the past of a few years, I think this year is going to be the eighth one.
Well, can you share his links to it so we can share it with our listeners?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, they're fun to do. Take a long time to put together, but I look at it as like the world's most complicated jigsaw puzzle. In that, with a jigsaw puzzle, every piece has the perfect place for the puzzle. But if you try and jam a piece which isn't quite right into a place where it doesn't quite fit, then it doesn't quite work. And I try and take that philosophy and apply it to the montage, which is one of the reasons why it takes a long time to do. But if you are able to find that perfect clip for the perfect part in the montage all the way going through, then it's a better edit, and people seem to enjoy it. So
it is a bit of an event on social media, isn't it? It's not to sound snarky in any way, shape or form, but the reach that his
montage
does is mad. There's all the big critics in the US who are loving it, and I remember it being on IndieWire and all these other places. So it's quite a momentous day.
I can understand the effort it takes. Have you guys seen The Wire? Have you seen The Wire?
Yeah.
Because there's one character for the listeners who Senator Clay Davies, and he has a catchphrase, which is "She." So one day I took upon myself to do a montage of all Senator Clay Davies's "She," and also some of his best lines. And you have to do it. I had to like go on IMDb and find out which episodes he was in.
Yeah.
Find out the time codes. Download those episodes, cut them out, and that arrange them in a way that kind of made sense. And that took me like a long time.
Yeah.
So for you to do that across a lot of different genres, and you're putting this all together, all I had to do is find Clay Davis as Isaiah Whitlock Jr., find his episodes and like scrub through.
Please send me the link to this. I want to watch it.
Yeah, I will do. Certainly. We'll do a link exchange.
Absolutely. I also have a podcast which I'm debuting with Clarice. Formerly Off This Parish.
Absolutely.
And Hannah Flint. It's called The Faith of Black.
Soon to be Off This Parish.
Soon
Hannah.
To be Off This Parish.
Hannah.
It's called Faith to Black. And it will be, it will have all the film reviews and the film news stuff, which you get on a number of film podcasts. But it will also be talking about film culture and film Twitter. And it'll be analyzing that with perspective and nuance for on a week-to-week basis. And that should be really, really fun. It's debuting later in March, so by the time this episode is out, you may already have access to it. But please do tune in and submit your questions and let us know what you think. It's going to be fun ride.
Thank you. Oh, so today we are talking about your choice, Scott, which is Groundhog Day. can you tell us why you chose it and give us a synopsis in a minute, if anyone in the world
why
hasn't
did
seen
I choose
it.
Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
Because it's awesome.
Good. I like it. Concise. Now, synopsis.
I think it's safe to say that Groundhog Day is one of the most classic and best modern comedies. In fact, it's probably one of the best comedies of all time. It's one of my favorites. It has one of my most favorite people in. The Groundhog. He's great. If you see him in Ghostbusters, honestly, he's fantastic. No, of course, it's got the wonderful Bill Murray. And I love his philosophy on acting, which is, I will call you back if I want to be on your film.
Yeah.
But don't, just leave me the hell alone.
I do love him of recent years, because he dipped down a bit after the Groundhog Day, and then he's come back up. It's just like the person everyone wants to meet. And
I think you can thank Wes Anderson for that. I think Wes Anderson has found his new... Well, actually, and Sofia Coppola to a degree. I think they've both tapped into his
interests.
His old man grumpy old man persona and managed to get out amazing performances. But yeah, Groundhog Day, I watched when I was a kid, absolutely loved it. Didn't quite get it when I was a kid, but over repeat viewings, similar to what Bill Murray has to do in the film, it just gets better and better. If you don't know Groundhog Day, shame on you.
At this point, I should probably reveal that I only watched Groundhog Day for the first time earlier today for this podcast.
Oh my God. And you're a film critic.
We all Tuesday, have our blind spots, okay?
Tuesday, March the 10th, 2020. One woman seen Groundhog Day. If you've never seen Groundhog Day, it's the story of Phil Connors, a local weatherman who every year goes to Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney to cover the Groundhog Day events, which sees Phil the groundhog tell us whether there will be 6 more weeks of winter. And it's an annual thing that they do, even still to this very day. And one year he goes, and then he wakes up the next morning and discovers that he's living the same day over and over and over and over and over again. And I'm pretty sure that the film is what coined the phrase Groundhog Day.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is an outstanding film. You didn't talk about the rest of the cast. Andy McDowell.
Yes, Andy McDowell is in this, obviously famous for Four Winds and a Funeral, and recently seen in Ready or Not, which is very, very good if you've not seen it.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
Also, the great Chris Elliott, who appeared in Something About Mary and was on Saturday Night Live and lots of other things. Mm-hmm. And also Bill Murray's brother, who seems to pop up in every film that he's in.
Brian Doyle Murray.
Yeah. Oh, and of course, the amazing Stephen Tobolowsky, who is world famous Ned Ryerson. really good cast, and it's directed by Harold Ramis, who very sadly isn't with us anymore, but he
makes a short appearance in this.
He makes a short appearance as a doctor, and he also most famously played Egon in the 2 Ghostbusters films.
And you missed that. It's Michael Shannon's first film as well.
Yeah,
I forget about Michael Shannon. He's
the married couple.
Fred.
Oh yes, yeah. At the end, yeah, they give him the wrestling tickets, don't they? Michael Shannon. Did you know it was Michael Shannon when you watched it?
I didn't.
For the first time,
I didn't cut that somehow. That's amazing.
That's what happens.
It's very quick.
When you rewatch it, you'll get it.
I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
And again. And again.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You said you saw it when you were younger. I think I saw it when I was younger. And I think, interesting to know what you thought it was about when you watched it. Because I think I remember I knew what I thought it was about. I want to see if it's the same thing.
So I won't ramble on, but my story was when I was about 10 or 11, that was when I started getting into films, which was about when Groundhog Day came out in 93.
Yeah.
You can work out my age from that. And at the time, it was my uncle my mum's brother, who still lived at home with my nan and granddad. He had an array of videos. Some I was allowed to watch, some I was not allowed to watch. Some of those other ones included me going, hey, what's an American werewolf in London? You're 10, Scott, you can't watch that. But I managed to watch it a year later. But I'm pretty sure around that time was when I watched Ghostbusters for the first time, and Ghostbusters 2 introduced me to Bill Murray. And then that's when I watched Groundhog Day for the very first time. And honestly, I can't remember specifically, but I'm pretty sure I watched it for the first time. I thought, it's really funny. I have absolutely no idea what that was about. It's a very strange concept. It is a very out there concept. And it's one of those concepts that over the course of time endures so well because it is so original. And so it's such a simple idea as well. And, you know, people have tried to replicate it over the years, have tried to do something similar to this.
Was this the first time loop film?
I think it's been done. I mean, there's different variations of it. Obviously, something like whether it's not so much the repeating, but in terms of, like, if you look at A Wonderful Life, it's about a guy looking at his life in a different way and has to change the way that he lives his life.
Have you seen It's a Wonderful Life, Mom?
Have you seen It's Wonderful? Oh my goodness!
And also,
Come on. Are you listening, Empire readers?
Oh my gosh. Should I just leave now? Oh my gosh.
No, we're here to talk about Groundhog Day, which you have seen.
But so.
I was just going to say, whether or not it's the first sort of time loop film or not, it has reached the status whereby it's reached Die Hard status. And that, you know, there's so many sort of variations on the Die Hard sort of, you know, archetype now, where it's like, you know, Die Hard on the train, Die Hard in the White House, Die Hard and et cetera.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day is the same thing.
Yeah.
And when you reach that type of status, you know that it's a special film and it's definitely sort of worthy of that status. I only watched it earlier today. But I could definitely understand why, you know, people use that saying. And, you know, you're right that many people have been trying to emulate it across, you know, movies and TV. This the way in which this is executed in this film, I'm not sure anybody's bettered it, even though they tried to emulate it.
What do you think Groundhog Day was about when you were younger, and what do you think it's about now, Helen?
So definitely, I think the kind of romance bits I thought were a bit boring. So basically around this...
When you were younger?
Yeah, so around like the early 90s, I basically love Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Scrooge, and this. Mm. And bits with the groundhog and kind of the bits where he's quickly reliving the days, like where he puts a toaster in the bathtub, and the kind of like car chase with the groundhog. That was probably definitely my favourite moment.
Yeah, I think so. When I was younger, the concept did kind of go over my head. I kind of enjoyed it because of Bill Murray. Yeah. You know, I remember actually watching Ghostbusters 2 for the first time, and it took me so many years to work out, you know, the bit where he does the world of the psychic and he goes, "This is Peter Venkman saying," and he points to his head. He doesn't say what the joke is. And it took me until I was about 21 to realize, oh, it's because it's the world of the psychic and stuff like that.
So what all of you are saying is that it's good that I watched it, you know, at this point in my older life as opposed to younger in my life.
I think you get the nuances a bit more.
I think you're right. The nuances and what it is trying to be about, I think.
So what is it trying to be about, just to lay it out there for a mature audience?
There's lots of different, people have written, there's so many kind of essays and everything else about Groundhog Day these days. People have said it's, you know, it takes the onus off of its wonderful life, where it's an old kind of farty ass guy who's stuck in his ways that doesn't want to be bothered by anybody in life and has to kind of get himself out of it. People have said it's about purgatory, you know, a guy stuck in purgatory. Some people have said it's God playing a trick on probably the worst guy in the world because he's such a bastard to everybody. But I think it's about, for me, I've always loved the fact it's a guy just trying to make his life better, to try and be a better person. And it takes someone like Bill Murray to make that concept work. I think if this was, you know, Jim Carrey or Steve Martin, two people who I absolutely love, it just would not work. Yeah. It's that old, grumpy, kind of misogynistic guy who just wants everyone to leave him alone and let him do what he wants to do. And without him, this just doesn't work.
Absolutely. I think Tom Hanks was originally cast in the role. But Tom Hanks, I think by his own admission, sort of said that, you know, he's too nice.
Too nice.
And everyone will be waiting for that turn to niceness, whereas Bill Murray can pull off the, you know, misogynistic...
when it was first written by the guy that wrote it... And I know some of this from Wikipedia. I know some of this from Simon Brew's podcast because he's so good at what he does. Yeah. That the original script was much darker. Mm. You know, it was about an alcoholic and he did terrible things and everything else. And then at the end of the movie, it's not a spoiler, but he got out of the Groundhog Day time loop. But then Rita's character goes into the time loop. So she does the voiceover at the end of the film, and she's then stuck in what essentially is purgatory or whatever. But I think obviously then when someone like Harold Ramis comes in and then they bring on Bill Murray, is immediately it changes. But I think what's great about this is they kept the original writer on and they kind of worked it to where it would kind of sell to somebody. Mm-hmm. And they kept adding layers and layers, and they worked on the script so much to just get everything perfect. But I think no matter how perfect the script was or how perfect the director was or anything else, without Bill Murray, this just does not work. And for me, I think this is his crowning achievement, even though he's done so many amazing things over his career. I think it's just everything about it is up to his skill and his abilities as a comedian and as a person. And I don't think he'll ever better this performance. I think that's why it's endured so well.
What's Groundhog Day for you, Helen? Your thoughts?
I really enjoy this film. There's lots of things that I really like about it. And there's rewatching it again, I know you put this in the notes kind of post Me Too. It's really interesting that when he basically starts using the information that he's kind of picked up from the repeated days to try and woo Andie MacDowell, it kind of comes to a point where she kind of works this out. And he decides that actually that's not kind of the route in. So where it could have been slightly sinister and not have aged particularly well, it's kind of interesting that he's like, oh, no, actually, this isn't going to work. And he just kind of works on himself rather than trying to kind of trick people or force people into doing things. So I think it's kind of interesting, but I think people remember it being a bit more that he kind of, the plot is, oh, yeah, but basically he just kind of tricks her into falling in love with him. It's not that. It's a little bit more clever than that. And there's some other bits that I really like. I really like the bit where he fits an entire cake into his whole mouth.
Such a great scene.
It's a great scene.
I love that, and he says what, doesn't he? Yeah. He's looking at him.
That whole table of cake. That's one of the things, because generally that's one of the things, if I was stuck in a time loop, we'd be like, well, fuck it, let's see how much cake I can eat.
And it also gets to the whole Groundhog Day thing really quickly.
Yeah. Mm.
Basically, the film starts, is doing the weather, and you think like there's going to be this whole setup, blah, blah, blah. No, they go and see the groundhog. Andy McDowell does the groundhog cute face thing. It's really funny. And then it gets going. So I forgot that it was actually pacier. It's only 1 hour and 41 minutes. I actually thought it was longer than that, but it's not. It's much shorter than my brain remembers it.
Yeah. Now, you're absolutely right on that Me Too point. It's only when he starts becoming selfless that Vita falls for him. And that's a really, really nice touch. And you're right, this film has aged so well. It's a timeless movie. It came out in 1993. Watched it earlier today. And yeah, it still holds up very, very well. I think that's partially because there's no sort of pop culture references in the 90s in the film.
It's true.
When you look at the comedies today, it's full of pop culture references. In a couple of decades, they're stuck in a couple of months.
Yeah.
Whereas this doesn't have any of that, and that helps. One other thing I really like about the script, it doesn't explain how he's landed in this situation.
And that's a key thing in the making of it. I think in the earlier versions, they tried to explain it and got themselves caught up in a massive knot doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't have to have it. I mean, he's going to see if a groundhog is going to predict winter or spring. Yeah. I mean, you're in that world already.
Yeah. Also, the point you made about the Me Too thing, because there is the mirror of that in the sense that in the beginning, he does utilize that stuff to get specific women into bed. Mm. That is the one thing that he wants to do. Because, you know, from a male's point of view, what would you try and, you know, rats and sexist or misogynist, someone like that would use that to his advantage to try and sleep with everybody that he can. And when he's done, you know, you don't see specific times, but he could have worked his way around the town of all the ladies and then gone, oh, I'm done now. What do I do now?
And that's the thing. You don't get an exact amount of time that he's there. Mm. I've heard stories where it's like
38 days.
I've heard stories like we're supposed to like 10,000 souls or 10,000 regeneration.
90,000 days. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But the whole kind of, what would you do if you were caught in this time loop? And inevitably, you would end up just going, well, let's see what happens with these people. Let's see what happens there. And after the second loop, I don't think you really get an idea of how long is in between each time.
Yeah, I think that's down to the editing as well, because there's the symbolic thing of the amount of times that she slaps him, because that could have been infinite. You know, it could have been a million times that she slaps him and everything else. But I like the way that it cuts that into such a quick kind of minute thing. But then you think, yeah, there's no, it's just infinite in many ways.
But to your point, all that repetition, which is really, really great, there are many films of this ilk where the lead character would become a completely different person over the course of the film. This still has Phil, he's still the same person, he's just a better person. And there's a difference between those two things. And I think this film gets that balance right. I've seen many films of this type of ilk where, you know, it's incomparable, the person at the end to the person at the beginning. But because you see that journey, you know, they really execute it really well in this film.
It's still fundamentally Phil Connors at the end of the film. Exactly, yeah.
Has anyone seen Groundhog Day the musical?
No. I've heard it's quite good, though.
Yeah, it was a musical. Tim Minchin wrote it, and it came to the Old Vic like 3 or 4 years ago. And it, for me, it was absolutely outstanding. And it went transferred to the West to Broadway, and it failed there. And I don't know why. Tim mentioned behind the music was great. It's Groundhog Day. They did it well, and it didn't work for a reason. But hearing Tim mention, and I don't know who wrote the book, his explanation for how long Phil Connors was stuck in the Groundhog Day was, I wanted to be there long enough so he can learn to play the piano as well as he does. Mm. And that was the kind of time frame. He was like, I didn't really care about the souls or how the loop was working, but he needs to be there enough to be able to play the piano as amazingly as he does at the end of it. This film is a stone cold classic in my point of view, and I love that I came to it just like I love Bill Murray. As a kid, it was like Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy, Bill Murray. If they're in a film, I'm going to watch it. Mm-hmm. Maybe on Schwarzenegger as well. It's like if they're in a film, I'm going
to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
you just immediately
watch it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was around the time. Obviously, I was obsessed with Steve Martin when I was a kid, and that's where I got into comedy and then liked same as you, Eddie Murphy, and then watching stuff like The Naked Gun. And then post this, a couple of years later, obviously, then Robin Williams as well. And a couple of years after that, obviously, then Jim Carrey came into everybody's lives. And when we were teenagers, that was from me and my friends. That's all we wanted to watch was Jim Carrey movies. But I think the fact that it is Bill Murray, and you know, it was in a period where he was making arguably not the best. I mean, apart from Ghostbusters, and he obviously still to this day will not say anything good about Ghostbusters 2, even though I really like Ghostbusters 2. After Stripes, and obviously he was in Tootsie and stuff like that. It was really that he was doing. But then as soon as Groundhog Day came out, it was almost an explosion of like, oh, people started to be, oh, Bill Murray is actually pretty good with the right material. And I think coupled with Harold Ramis, I think it's, you know, the right match made in heaven, if you like.
I think, his kind of Bill Murray-essence with Sofia Coppola and Wes Anderson is my favourite period. But I think this is my favourite Bill Murray film. And his turn in the first Wes Anderson film is in Rushmore. Love that to bits. Him and that is just has me in stitches all the time.
I think for me, Steve Zissou.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
it's my favorite Bill Murray, and it almost feels like he is sort of playing Bill Murray in that as kind of a bit of a reflective piece. I mean, I like this, but
Bill Murray in that, But it does all stem from this, doesn't it? His change up.
Well, after he did Groundhog Day, there was a lot of failures that he made, you know, apart from, I think, What About Bob came out around the same time, and that's got a bit of a cult following. But then he made Man Who Knew Too Little, and he made the film with the elephant and all the other stuff in between, and didn't really go. But then, as you say, Rushmore completely changed everything. And then obviously then he did Lost in Translation and did his Oscar face when Sean Penn won. Because, no disrespect to Sean Penn, I thought Bill Murray
was that for Milk he won?
No, it was for Mystic River.
Okay.
It was the same year. I thought, and many other people thought, that should have been
Bill's.
Yeah.
Because I think
He'll never get a chance again.
It's the thing with...
Do you not reckon Wes Anderson will give an opportunity?
No, the Academy won't reward Wes Anderson.
They'll never do it. Yeah.
The Academy has awarded a foreign language international film, so maybe...
But that's the thing, because, like, you know, Moonlight won, and then they followed up that with Green Book. Parasite winning.
What's going to happen next year? Afraid
for what's going to happen in 2021
because of my obsession with the people that, the comedian people that we've mentioned. I mean, they're not comedians, they're actors, but they're known for comedy films. I think the general consensus and the joke always has been with their community is that they never give Oscars to stand-up comedians. I think Robin Williams is the exception, but again, it was in a drama, it wasn't in anything to do with Robin Williams-ism. So I think a lot of people like Bill Murray have come good. Look at Jim Carrey in The Truman Show, you know, or in Man on the Moon, or Robin Williams. And I think Steve Martin's given some great performances that people haven't seen before. So I don't think if he's ever going to win one, it would be, done a movie with Sofia Coppola again, where he plays a father to Rashida Jones.
Oh, really?
Which is coming out, I think, at the end of the year. I think it would take something like that rather than a Wes Anderson film, because I think you're right, Anderson movies thing. But I think, talk about Bill Murray, I mean, this. Everyone probably goes to Ghostbusters, but outside of Ghostbusters, it's always
Scrooge as well.
I love that film.
Probably one of the more flawed ones, but it's still his performance in that is just playing Scrooge. It's just great. Bill Murray and Scrooge together.
I just like
great
really
combination.
Grumpy Bill Murray. Yeah.
it's funny when you can't see them, viewers, but we're looking at Bill Murray-isms. The one in the bottom right corner.
I love that
sequence where he's like, ah, 1,000 people. You idiots. You hypocrites. All of you.
It's
so funny.
That's his transformation in this is great. And we've had a few other time loop films in the podcast. And when you think about it, they must actually be quite cheap to make. Because almost a scene one, run that a few times. Okay, let's go to day two. You're still wearing the same clothes. Just run that again. So it must actually be quite a nice film to make.
And yeah, I think
the,
this
the resets of would be very, 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 very quick.
I do love a time loop film. Mm. They were like
time travel,
favorite.
Obviously, yeah. As well is good. I think as well, I read somewhere in the last couple of days, I can't remember where it was somewhere, but about how much of a challenge it must have been for the supporting cast, because the amount of repetition, because he doesn't necessarily repeat everything, but they have to repeat pretty much everything that they do.
Yeah.
You know, the sequence we were talking about where he puts the cake in his mouth, that's, you see that a few times where Chris Elliott comes in at the same thing and the guy drops the plate and all that kind of stuff. That must have been such a challenge, whereas Bill Murray's just sitting there eating cake and drinking coffee from the what do you call it? The kettle. Is it a kettle you drink it from? Whatever. But there's lots of time loop movies and lots of time machine movies. You know, obviously Back to the Future is a classic for many people, but I don't think anyone is, like you were saying before, every ingredient is perfect. Everything is measured so, so well in this that literally everything, every note that they hit, it hits it absolutely perfectly.
Yeah. Now, we're lucky enough to, you know, watch a lot of really good movies during our jobs. There are very few movies that make you want to be a better person. Like the last movie I can remember in recent times is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
No.
That movie, you know, it made you want to be a better person. And again, you know, Tom Hanks, you mentioned, just the nicest person in the world. And that was a perfect role for him. This is another one of those films, those rare movies that make you want to be a better person. That's a very short list, but this one.
Do you want to say anything else before we head to the scores, guys?
It's a classic. No, there's so many great scenes in it as well. I think that's, there's so many, you know, you can do this movie, a time loop movie, but to be funny as well is quite a challenge.
But also it gets very, very dark.
It does get dark. As I say, the original concept was much darker, but the darkness is still in there. You know, he throws a toaster in the bath to try and kill himself.
Jumps off the bridge,
kidnaps the groundhog. But it's got some great lines in there as well. I will always love the line, a classic line, one of the greats, which is where he says, do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster? And she says, I don't know, but I can check with the kitchen. Even to this day, it's just brilliant. And the old, you know, the old guy is guarding the money.
Yeah.
He has his one, when, two, when, sorry, the car, yeah. three, four.
Wind blows, he goes, yeah. bend over.
Gust of wind.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the phases where there's the, okay, he's trying to sleep with people phase, and he's trying to like do bad things and just steal money. And then he just gets super depressed and tries to kill himself. Mm. But then when it becomes like, oh, I need to get there in time to catch the kid who's falling out of the tree, and that kid never apologizes. Mm. And then he goes to that phase of trying to save the old guy, which is just heartbreaking. And no matter what, and the person at the hospital just says, some people are just old.
Mm.
And that must have been heartbreaking. He must have tried 1,000 times to save this guy. And it just doesn't work. So it goes through lots of different iterations of what you can try and do in that time.
I think with all these movies as well, you have to see them hit the absolute rock bottom before they can, not so much transform, but they can start the climb back up.
And that probably was his rock bottom, where he just, again and again, he just couldn't help this one person who in the first instance he just dismissed. And that's when you rewatch it, you kind of see those instances. He just like goes past and almost kind of like, this guy. And then in like half an hour through, maybe give him some money, and then it becomes the focus on the old guy for 5 minutes. And that's just genuinely one of the amazing things that makes it super rewatchable.
We've talked a lot about Bill Murray, and rightfully so, but
Andy McDowell.
Yeah. He took the words right out of my mouth.
I think I was legitimately in love with Andy McDowell when around this time. This Green Card, Four Weddings, even though I don't watch it, but I think again, this is her film though as well. As much as Bill's.
Hmm.
She's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Really funny, and brings like the kind of lightness and brightness to grumpy old Bill, and like her hair's great in this.
Great hair. Isn't her hair always great? Isn't it always like this big, like bouncy?
But yeah, the performance in this reminds me actually of Minnie Driver's in Good Will Hunting, and they both kind of play this sort of very sort of down to earth, kind of fun and bright person, which often in kind of the romantic role for a woman is not kind of like the fun person, or they always tend to be kind of a little bit stuck up somehow. But in this and in Good Will Hunting, there's the kind of fun person that you want to be around, and kind of the funness kind of rubs off on people that are around.
That's always one of my favourite bits in this, is the subtle bit when he's trying to woo her. And what should we drink to? And she says, I like to drink to world peace. And he's like, fuck, she's a good person. And that's one of those kind of key things where you just realize it, you're already seeing that what kind of person she's, but that encapsulates exactly who Andy is. Yeah. And him trying to weasel his way into her.
She sees through it.
Yeah. Scores?
Let's head to the scores.
Let's
do it. Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zotz-Austwick.
And together we host a show called Song by Song, where we deal with the music of Tom Waits. We've been going since 2015. Every week we talk about a new track. We've made our way through 15 seasons so far of his music.
And now we're going back to the early years. And if you haven't listened to Tom Waits before, it's not the growly stuff. It's not the stuff where he's hitting an automobile with a bone for percussion. It's a nice, easy way into his music.
If that sounds like something you would be interested in, you should check out our website, songbysongpodcast.com, or put Song by Song into your podcatcher of choice.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of the scores are out of 5, and you may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, Scott, with your recommendability, please.
Did these go up to 11?
This is not Spinal Tap.
This is not fun. Another classic comedy. It has to be a 5 for me. We've talked a lot about this and its kind of durability, and there's not many films over the course of, you know, especially in the last sort of 30, 40 years that take a concept, run with it, and actually somehow make it better than you could have ever imagined it to be. And the fact that Bill Murray's in it just makes it awesome anyway. But for me, I think it is a stone cold comedy. In fact, it is one of the best comedies ever made. And not just that, it's a very, a great film about, you know, being, you said before about being better people and, you know, trying to do good in every day, and all these years later, we need a lot more of people like that, or at least people that want to try to be better.
And that's why, Beautiful Then in the Neighborhood it took me apart when I saw it in the cinema. And I think you just need it, you want more people like that. And I really like your phrasing on that it just wants to make you a better person. Watch this film, watching Bill Murray's transformation wants to make you a better person. Listen to that, UK and American governments.
Don't go stealing groundhogs, because that's not how you get there.
Or toilet paper.
I'm on. Your recommendability?
I'm going to go 5 as well. This is a film that many people had recommended to me. And
what were people's reactions when you said, I've never watched Groundhog Day?
I may have, been smarter, a lot smarter than I was today, and not told them, not divulged that information to them. But I can see why people have recommended the film to me. It is as great as Scott purports it to be. And I will now be recommending it to people as well. I'm looking forward to watching it again.
Hold your horses for the next score, Helen.
You can't hate on this film.
You can, but we will be judging you.
I think if you're hating on Groundhog Day, then you need to kind of reassess where you are.
Your life choices.
Yeah. It is kind of like pretty much kind of fun for all the family type thing. So I'm going to give it a 5. I think it really lives up to now. It's not really aged in any kind of bad way. Bill Murray and Andy McDowell are great in it. There's enough humor in there just to entertain anyone, and it's if you watch it and it makes you want to be a better person, then it's done its magic.
Yeah, this is 5. This is 5. This is 5.
Getting guys. Emotional.
There's no debate. This is a 5-star film.
Amazing reason there.
Recommend both. It's just easily watchable. If this is on any point through its running time and I flick it on, then it's like, well, this is where I'm at for the next anywhere between 5 minutes and 1 hour and 40 minutes. I'm not going to leave where I am to go anywhere else because it just hooks you straight back in. Yeah, delightful. I'm going to repeat viewing score. I'm going to divulge more as we go along. Repeat viewing score, Scott.
I'm going to give it a 5 again.
Have you an idea how many times you've watched this?
Hundreds.
Do you reckon it's that many?
Yeah, it has to be.
Is this your most watched film of all time?
No.
What's your most watched film of all time?
That would be 1987's classic sci-fi film, Masters of the Universe. Oh. And also Mrs. Doubtfire, but that's only because I've tried to perfect the voice over so many years. I'm quite good at it, but
you can't say that now and not.
You know what? Here's a quick fun story. I did a junket the other day for Sulphur and White, and halfway through sometimes with junkets you do two slots for two different people. You have to kind of do one for home entertainment or whatever. Halfway through, Dougray Scott joked with me and said, "You have to go out and you're not going to change your shirt. So why don't you come out and come in and be somebody else? Can you do a different voice?" And my brain, being my brain, said, "Well, I can do a pretty good Mrs. Doubtfire voice." And he said the same as you, which was, "Shall I do the repeat?" "Oh, I wish I was in Groundhog Day, dear, but I prefer Robin Williams. He's a lovely, lovely. Oh, that's my little bit on the side." It's there forevermore. I love Mrs. Doubtfire. Back to Groundhog Day. Repeat viewings. Yeah, I think a 5, because I've seen it a lot of times, and I think you get a lot more of the nuances the more you watch it. There's little things that you'll enjoy more. There's little things that you'll get from it. You'll get more kind of subtlety from Bill Murray's performance, from Andy McDowell's performance. We haven't mentioned Harold Ramis's direction much, but I think his direction is very, it's a very kind of welcoming film. It doesn't get in the way of Bill Murray's performance. I think their rapport together is so good from Ghostbusters anyway, that they both understood the kind of the concept and what they could do and what they couldn't do. And I think that all just adds together to that. And again, it's one of those movies that you can watch it and try and get something philosophical out of it. You could watch it as just a rom-com with a bit of a high concept and still get all of the emotions you would get if you sat and watched the aforementioned Four Winners and a Funeral or anything of that, or When Harry Met Sally or something like that. I think it ticks a lot of boxes. And it's really funny as well.
Yeah. Come on.
I think I'm going to have to agree with Scott and go 5. Obviously,
it's interesting. You've seen it standing ready. You're like, I need to see it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
What will you be looking out for on the next viewings?
I definitely think Bill Murray's performance. I'm interested to see the nuances now that I know how everything plays out. I think that'll be the thing I'm most interested to really sort of, pay more attention to. But yeah, I enjoyed it so much watching it the first time. And I want to experience that again. And it almost feels like a rite of passage with Groundhog Day. You have to watch it again. You have to watch it at least twice. It's Groundhog Day. So yeah, I'm gonna go 5 on it.
Helen.
So I'm gonna go a little bit low. I'm gonna go with 4 on it.
There's so many nice biscuits at the fine party and you can't have them anymore. But it's fine. 4 for me and Scott, it's fine.
I've watched it quite a few times over the year, and if you said to me, "Do you want to watch it tomorrow?" I'd be like, maybe. Whereas if you said, "Do you want to watch The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou?" I'd be like, definitely. So it's not quite up there in my Bill sort of top, but it is high up. And it's interesting, the direction, apparently Harold Ramis, Bill Murray said to him, like, the direction was, "Am I bad Phil or am I good Phil?"
Yeah.
And that was kind of how he got the performance. So it's, it's something that you can return to over and over again, but it's not my top repeat Bill.
Fair enough. I'm going for 5. I don't know how many times I've rewatched this, but I can't see myself not rewatching it. And there's a period it kind of came on Netflix and watched it then, and it went off and I was like, oh no. And then it came back and it's back on again. I was like, yeah. And then when you chose it, I was like, yeah. And as Helen said before the record, I think someone
did pick it, but we didn't end up recording.
Yeah,
something happened.
Did it either go off Netflix or did we couldn't do the recording in the end?
Maybe the record didn't get confirmed. Yeah. So yeah, we've watched it fairly recently for this purposes.
But that's great. And I don't know how many times. It's not hundreds. It's definitely in the scores of viewings.
Double figures.
Yeah. But I don't know every single time I watch it, there's a different nuance. The first time I noticed Michael Shannon was quite late on in my rewatching of it. Even though I was a big like Boardwalk Empire fan, I was like, that's Michael Shannon. Is that Michael Shannon? And then you rewind it and watch IMDb and like, okay, so you go back and like, okay, when does he first appear in the film? Because the first time I noticed him was at the end.
Right.
When he gets given the wrestling tickets, but of course he's there early because they meet him in the cafe, and you start to backfill that, and it's just so beautiful in the way he's done that.
Excellent stuff. Can we help yourself to milk chocolate digestive? It's just over there.
In the five party. Small screen score, Scott.
So I rewatched this on my. I shouldn't have done it, but it was easier than faffing about with plugs to watch it on my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
It's. Doesn't matter where you watch it. You can watch it on a plane. You can.
Has anyone seen this in a big screen?
No. I've seen it. I saw it at the Prince Charles a few times.
What's that
it's
like?
It's fantastic. Yeah, seeing it on film as well, because it's obviously was made in 1993. It's still on film. It's not digital or anything like that. And I think, again, for the older films that are shot on film, it does give it that kind of classic feeling. You get all the little rings and everything else. So it does add that kind of vintage-ness to it, if you like. So I'm going to be really boring and say five again.
But what was the audience like at the Prince Charles?
They love it. They love it. And it's not so much a quote along, but they know some of the bits, you know, like everybody knows what the radio guy, the radio DJs say, you know.
Do they go bing when they're Stephen Khabarovsky?
everyone knows the, do you all know it off by heart? I've seen it so many times. I kind of know because it isn't, I think the radio DJ that speaks is Brian Doyle, Doyle Murray, his brother. He plays the mayor, but I think it's his voice, the guy that says okay campers, rise and shine, don't forget your booties because it's cold out there.
Rewind, you have to do it in the actual sort of accent and the energy that he does it. So two, one, go.
Okay campers, rise and shine, don't forget your booties because it's cold out there.
Better, much better.
Anyway, classic. I should have done it with Mrs. Doubtfire. Imagine that, Mrs. Doubtfire doing the DJ. Food isn't shaking.
I think as a kid, I didn't actually realise it was playing the same song and playing the same iteration of that again.
Yeah. What you were saying about Life Aquatic and Steve Zissou, I think there's definite footprints from this into his roles going forward when he's a slightly older, you know, through Lost in Translation and the Wes Anderson stuff. I think there's little bits, little subtleties in this performance that he carries through to those as well, which I think make it even better to watch. So I'm going to go for five. This is going to be really boring.
Come on.
I'm going to take my leave of the five parties there, Scott. Sorry. I'm going to go four. Obviously, it's my first time watching it, but it was very satisfying. But having been in the audience, basically I'm divulging far too much here, but I recently watched Elf for the first time people are shaking their heads at me very vigorously at this moment.
I think Elf is more forgivable than Groundhog Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Is it? Oh.
But there's something special about being in the audience for a film like that in the big audience. And I think with Groundhog Day having reached the legendary status that it has, I think something similar will happen if you were to watch this film in a big audience, in a big cinema today. So whilst it was still satisfying to watch it on my own for the first time, that is something that I would like to experience. And I think that would only make the film experience, or the experience of watching the film, better. So I'm going to go four on that one.
Helen.
So I've only ever seen this on TVs, and while like the thought of kind of a Prince Charles sort of setting does sound appealing, I'm not going to be rushing out to do that. So yeah, a five.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 4.5. I think watching this in the Prince Charles with everyone who knows loves this film would be absolutely outstanding. I don't think it would be a quote song. It'd just be. I think I'd get further insights into where I'll just get more from the film that I hadn't picked up. And every time I go into Prince Charles to watch a film that I've seen before loads of times, like True Romance, I've picked up other things where I hadn't been. Seen Die Hard and the Prince Charles was like, oh shit. You just pick these things up. And I think this would be one of those films again. So I'm giving it a slightly lower score because I've never seen it on a big screen, but I think Prince Charles, it would resonate with me in a bit more. So I look
it's strange talking about the small screen store for an older film because, you know, I don't know if I'm certainly not old enough to have seen it or didn't see it in the cinema first time round, which is a strange...
I remember it coming out.
You know? Yeah, I remember it coming out. It's just strange that I pretty much watched it on a pretty much on the TV screen for most of my life, apart from, you know, maybe 2 years ago when I saw it at the Prince Charles for the first time.
So, I mean, I did ask you what was that like, but were people dressed up as characters or were people
sounding out at certain points?
Yeah,
so it wasn't, obviously they do the quote-alongs for films like Elf.
Yeah.
They do quote-alongs, they obviously do the sing-alongs where if you go to, you know, whether it's La La Land or whether it's Frozen or whatever it is, they obviously have an engagement. I think this is more that people laugh. You see the subtleties where people laugh, you see the subtleties where people maybe afterwards you can hear them talking about something where you go, oh, I didn't. Maybe what they think it's about or what, you know, Bill Murray is, whether it is a purgatory thing, or remember someone saying about it being God's just playing a trick on him or something like that. You get all those things out of it. But there was definitely an interaction with, you know, the share song and the DJs and maybe little bits where he's, you know, laughing at, you know, whether it's putting his cake in his mouth or little quotes or little things. I think there was one where people were really, really laughing at the bit where he goes to the cinema as the cowboy.
Oh yeah,
and he's like two adults, and it was just Walker's laughter. You think that's really funny, but when you watch it with an audience, it's people absolutely wetting themselves. And I was like, I didn't think it was that funny, big a laugh, but okay. So you get all of that as well, and just as you say, the kind of community thing. You're all there to watch a film that you really love. Whereas what we do, we can go and see a screening and you can tell people don't like it.
It's very sterile.
You're going to see it with an audience that absolutely love it the same as you.
Yeah, no, it changes the game when everyone who's... If it's a respectful audience, it changes the game. Because if everyone's reacting to the same thing at the same time in the same way, that's why cinema is unparalleled.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Netflix, I love Amazon, I love all the streaming platforms, but they can't replicate that. And I think for a film like Groundhog Day, it'll only be that much more special. So,
engagement score, Scott. Don't be embarrassed. I know where you're going to go. So just put it
2.5. No, I'm going for 5.
2.5 times 2.
We're on the previous episode that me and my mom, we talked about Inside Man, didn't we? About how the kind of the subtleties and the... watching how smart the film is and watching it within the first sort of couple of minutes where you get the music and then you get Clive Owen's character telling you what the movie's about but not telling you what the movie's about. With Groundhog Day, like you said before, they get into it so quick that you're in the world straight away, and then when the first loop comes you want to see more and more and more. And I don't think maybe I don't meet the right people, but I haven't met anybody that hasn't, like you say, if it's on, they'll sit and watch it and sit and watch it all the way through. If it's on Netflix and it pops up, and you just want something to watch, you'll pop it in. Whether you watch it to get a lot out of it or you just watch it because it's Bill Murray being funny with a groundhog. You know, that sounded really, really horrible, didn't it?
That kind of film, people.
It's not that kind of film, don't watch the uncut version. It's terrible. But I think anyone that sits and watches it... Release the Davis cut, yeah. Yeah, hashtag Davis cut. Good Lord. Dark places. Whenever it's on, if it's on TV, you know, if it's on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on ITV, you're going to just sit and watch it. And I think even if you do that on Netflix as well, if you see it pop up on your thing, you're going to sit and watch it and get so much out of it on every single time. So I just think it's just, I'm going to say the word, I haven't said it yet. It is a masterpiece.
Oh, he dropped the M word.
It just is. Look how many retweets and likes on Groundhog Day. Look at that.
I'm on.
I am going to go 4 on engagement score. I obviously really enjoyed it. I was very satisfied with it. It will depend on at what point I started watching Groundhog Day as to whether or not I would finish it. Because as someone who's only watched it once, the reason why it was so satisfying is because I got to see that full journey. And I haven't memorized all Groundhog Day to the point where if I had to start watching halfway through, I know sort of, you know, how much I still got left to go and all the funny bits and all that sort of stuff. A lot of the joy with this movie for me is that I got to see the full journey from, you know, asshole to Better Dude and the love story in between, and I got to see all those beats and everything else. So it's going to take me a few more rewatches to the point where I've memorized more of it. Then I can sort of confidently say, you know, I can start watching Groundhog Day halfway through and, I want to rewatch that bit and that bit. So I'm just going to sit and rewatch the rest of it. So that is why I'm giving it a 4 instead of a 5.
Helen.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you, Amon. I'm going to go with a 4 as well. I think this is kind of a plus thing and a minus thing, technically, for the engagement. But Groundhog Day for me is the kind of film that I can come to at any point in its runtime and kind of sit down and enjoy it. It could be halfway through, it could be 10 minutes towards the end, it could be at the very start. So for me, I don't have to be 100% kind of engaged from the start and the finish. And because I've seen it so many times now, because I kind of knew quite a lot of stuff, I was quite enjoying getting into the trivia at the same time as watching it.
So you're IMDb-ing, were you?
So yeah, because it was
dual screening.
Interesting to go there. I know, but I've seen it fairly recently, and it's kind of got that sort of pace about it that you can join it like that.
So 4.
4, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5. Boom. Every single time, it's something new to the film, and I think it's great. And there's very few films I have that for me, where there's literally every single time there's something new to it. And that gives us an overall score of 4.71875.
That's super high,
Super high. Let's do, if you go to our website, flixwatch.tv/scoreboard, and you can have a look and see the top films, and this is number 3.
Ooh. Ooh. Wow.
That's high.
Let's hold on. Let's just double check that score again. 4.71875. I thought this would be slightly higher. I thought this might. So the top is When Harry Met Sally, which is 4.78125. I did think this might topple it, but number 3, just above What We Do in the Shadows, is it's in good company. I think it's that. We've done well over 150 films at this point.
Yep.
So this is A grade Flix Watcher territory.
Yeah. This is one that kind of has done well across all of the scores, which is not an easy task to do.
No, not at all.
Bing.
So we went to, as always, before going into the record, we put a shout out on Twitter. And in this case, we are reviewing Groundhog Day, #GroundhogDay, with a woman. And Scott writes films. Have you seen it? Give us your thoughts for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. We didn't have that many responses. I think we just had one. We had one guy doing a Groundhog Dayism.
He did a funny.
Yeah. Do you want to take that?
Lee Thomas at Lee Thomas 5. Who said Groundhog Day is a terrific movie I could watch over and over again, arguably Bill Murray's best. And then further down, he repeated it again in a very, very funny Groundhog Day manner.
Yeah. You also gave the movie 5 stars.
5 stars. Yeah. Yeah. What was the one with the cats?
That was me replying to...
Oh, I see.
Replying to his gag.
Yeah, it's clever. I like that.
Guys, thank you very much for joining us. Can you tell the guys who are listening, dear listener, where they can find you online? And one final plug and say goodbye.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Scott Writes From. You can also find all of my interviews and things on heyyouguys.com and on our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/heyyouguysblog, I think it is. But if you head over there, you can see my lovely face talking to some famous people.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter at A Woman. You can find all my musings on film and TV there. I am also on YouTube. My YouTube channel name is Amonimus. There's a theme here. you can find all my montages there. I'll also be on the Fade to Black podcast, and I don't think we've got a Twitter yet. We might do when this episode comes out. But
I'd hope so. It's free.
Yeah. But we'll be on iTunes, on Spotify, at the very least, with new episodes weekly. So check those out.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Enjoyed this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at Flix Watcher Pod on Twitter, and we're at Flix Watcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.